Okay, welcome everyone. This is Deb, and you are attending the Starving for God BBA workshop. And welcome to the beginning of your fourth step. It's just getting good now, so don't go anywhere. I'm really excited. It sounds like we've got a lot of people on the call today, and I really, really hope that in a few weeks we have the same number of people on the call, because this is where this program really, really launches into a different pace and a different rhythm. You know, the steps 1 through 3 has a certain rhythm to it, and now we're in a different rhythm as we're in 4 through 9, and this is where it really, really gets great and juicy. And I'm extra excited today because we have two special guests on the call. We have Tammy and Ivy, who are calling in from San Diego, and they were both in the group that I just finished the steps with. And so I'm really excited for them to be on the call today because they're going to be sharing their experience with having done the fourth step recently. So definitely stick around on the call today to hear about their experience. Okay, so let's find out who else is on the call. So go ahead and press *6 to unmute yourself and tell us your name and where you're from and how you identify. So who else do we have on the call today?
Hi, Jen.
Go ahead, Jen.
Jen from Burbank, compulsive overeater and Al-Anon and part-time clutterer.
Hi, Jen.
Hi, it's Lynn, a compulsive eater, drug addict from Sherman Oaks, California.
Hello, Lynn.
Hi, this is Kimberly Levesser Ross from Tahunga, California, and I'm a compulsive eater and drug addict.
Hey, Kimberly.
This is Deb from San Diego, compulsive overeater and addict.
Hey, Deb.
Hi, it's Susan.
Cheryl, San Diego, alcoholic, compulsive eater.
Hi, Cheryl.
Debbie, are we reintroducing ourselves?
Yep, because we're on the recording now. Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is Sue from Western Mass, compulsive overeater and debtor.
Hi, Sue.
Suzanne. It's Angel, grateful, compulsive overeater, and I'm also in clutter, A-C-O.
Beautiful. Hello, Angel.
This is Hortense, who used to be known as Jane, calling from Jerusalem.
Hi, Hortense.
Eater. Hi.
Beautiful.
Hi, this is Suzanne from San Mateo, and I'm a compulsive overeater, Al-Anon, and many other things, too. Thanks.
Awesome. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi, this is Deborah from Encinitas, a compulsive overeater, Al-Anon, controlling, fixing, and obsessing.
Awesome. And Deb, if you wanted to also share today about your experience with having done the fourth step, I would love to hear from that as well.
Thank you, Deb.
Yeah. Who else wants to introduce themselves?
This is Stephanie Budak from Livermore.
Hi, Stephanie.
Hello.
Okay, well, we'll get started. So welcome to everybody who has introduced themselves and for those folks who haven't introduced themselves. Natan, is that you? I just heard a voice.
Cammie from Visalia.
Oh, hey, Cammie.
Hi, Deb. Sorry, I'm late.
It's okay.
I know I heard a voice. Somebody else that wants to introduce themselves. Okay. I think someone's trying to, but they're not getting through. So we hear you. You're with us. So really quickly, the homework for next week is assignment 14. So this week, what you were supposed to show up with was your list. You don't need yet to commit anything onto the actual worksheets. You just have a separate sheet of paper with your list of people, institutions, and principals that you're resentful at. And then your homework for next week is to actually write the cause associated with each one of those resentments. And we're going to go over today exactly how to do that. You're still doing that on a separate sheet of paper. And what I'm going to recommend is that just to keep things organized, because all these inventories start, it just becomes a lot of paper, is to just get a three-ring notebook and just hole punch all of your photocopied inventories, stick them in your notebook, put your Big Book Awakening four-step workshop packet in like the front folder or something, and just have everything in one place. It'll make life a lot easier for you. And again, to find the inventories to print out and the four-step workshop packet, I would still actually reference the old website, the bbastuff.com website. I put a link in the call-in information email that went out to you all yesterday because I was looking at the new website, the BBA Works website, and I couldn't find where the four-step packet is. So I'm going to follow up with them on that, but I just didn't want to send you guys to that website, and then you're kind of clicking around. You can't find it. I also, when I was on that site, saw that my recordings aren't up on the site yet. So I need to speak with their webmaster and just find out what's going on there. So for right now, just check out bbastuff.com and go to the four-step tools, and you'll get the packet there. And you can print out that. And the packet really is just giving you the worksheet examples. But then you also have just the blank forms of the resentment inventory worksheet, the fear inventory worksheet, and the sex inventory worksheet. We're not focusing on the fear and the sex right now, but you're welcome to print out those inventories if you want. And we'll talk more about that at that time. Like I mentioned before, especially if you're new to the Big Book Awakening way of going through the steps, I would highly recommend that you stick to under 20 resentment inventories. I've worked with newcomers who have done under 15. I even think some of the people who might be sharing on the call today from my last group did under 10. I really, really believe that you'll see everything that you need to see. And more is not always better. And my only concern with doing 30, 40, 50, 60 resentments is that it becomes so overwhelming, it becomes insurmountable, and then you're not going to finish. It's like paralysis by analysis, and like it just becomes insurmountable for people. And so I would highly recommend sticking to a smaller number that's attainable. This isn't the last time that you're going to be doing the step. You know, you have plenty of time to do, to go through the steps again and to do your inventory. You have a lot of opportunities in your daily 10th step, you know, when you get to the end of the work where you're going to be able to do any spot check inventories as they come up. So I'll talk a little bit more about that, about like the perfectionism that comes along with this stuff. But let me just say right now that more is not always better. And what you might start to find is that you have numerous inventories that all start to sound the same. Like you're writing your causes, and it's like pretty much a repeat from, you know, other ones. And so what might start to make sense with certain inventories is that you actually start to group people. So let's say I'm resentful at, my third grade teacher, my college professor, and the principal. You can group it as, you know, like the educational system or teachers or something like that. I would not do that with, like, close family members. Like, I wouldn't just say, oh, my family. Like, I would definitely write on my mom and my dad and, you know, and siblings and things like that. But if there's, like, more distant relatives, like, let's say you can do a grouping of, like, my cousins or something like that, distant relatives or something like that. So if you have specific questions about groupings or anything else, there's, like, that's actually what I want to get into right now here is there's various options for group support. So as hopefully all of you read in the call in information email I sent out yesterday, I really, really would like for us to do a Facebook group. It was an idea that I had at the very, very beginning, and then, like, I didn't actually follow through with it. But what I'd like to do is invite everybody from this group into Facebook. Now, even if you don't have a Facebook account, you can actually, you have two options. So if you have a Facebook account but you want to stay anonymous, you can just simply set up a fake name and send that information to me, the account name and the email associated with it, and I'll just add you to the group, and you can just work under that name. And if you don't have an account, you can still stay anonymous if you choose. You don't have to be a part of Facebook. You don't have to, you know, all of a sudden not everyone knows where you are and all that kind of stuff. But you can also just create a fake account and send that information to me, and I can add you to the list. It's a closed group. Anything that you post in there does not get blasted out to everybody that you know. So if you have any questions or concerns, if you're someone who doesn't not used to Facebook and you have some questions or concerns, because I know how it feels when you're not sure how the system works to post something and to not know who's seeing it and who's not. But essentially, if it's in a closed group, only the people who are invited into that closed group will see that post. So that's how that works. What I'm going to do on Wednesday morning is, if I haven't heard from you, I'm going to send out a blanket invitation to everybody. I'm going to include everybody's emails in this invitation into the group. So if you do not want your email in that invitation, contact me beforehand, send me the appropriate information, email, or account number that you want me to add into that group, so that when I send out the group invitation, the right information goes to you and your email isn't anywhere that you don't want it to be. If you have any questions about that, email me after the workshop. So that the Facebook group is there for us to ask questions, share our experience, share any kind of – I get a number of you sending me audio recordings and things and resources from other resources within program and fellowship. This is the place that we want to start posting all of that so that everybody can benefit from that. So that's number one. Number two is, after the call today, when I send out the playback information email, I'm also going to have a list of seasoned BBA people who I've personally worked with. So there's lots of seasoned BBA people who are excellent resources. I'm just going to send you the names of the people who I've directly worked with, who I know personally, because I know that we're carrying the same message. So this is by no means the only people that you can reach out to, but they are people who are willing to be a reach-out call and be help. Another resource for you as you're going through your fourth step is to listen to Tyler's workshop recordings on the fourth step, Dan Sherman's, and Joe C's. All of those you can access on the new BBA website, the bbaworks.com, or the old one, BBA Stuff. You can access it in both places. Very, very useful. And then, so your inventory is something that you're probably going to do mostly by yourself, and I'm going to talk in a moment about how to set yourself up for success with that, which, you know, is just, it's you and sitting with God, and I'll talk about that in a second. But I've also found it very, very useful to get together with a step partner or a fellow participant and do your work alongside each other. It doesn't mean that you have to share your inventory with them, but it does keep both of you accountable, even if it's just a weekly accountability call, like, hey, every Monday, let's just make sure, or every Friday, let's just, you know, keep each other accountable for doing that week's assignment. So just, I recommend you just set up whatever kind of framework is going to support you. I know of a couple people on the call who actually are a part of a group where there's a group of people who get together and everybody's working on their inventory. That's awesome. That's absolutely great. As we step into the fourth step, I'm going to recommend a couple of, I'm going to recommend what you might want to do with your prayer practice. So consider starting out each day with your third step prayer and also with the resentment inventory prayer. And that is the set-aside prayer that we're going to be going into in just a moment. And that resentment inventory prayer can actually be found in your Big Book Awakening supplement on page 53. So make a note of that. Hopefully you have your Big Book Awakening with you right now, because when we do the set-aside prayer today, we're actually going to be referencing that prayer. So start out the day with that before you go into your meditation for the day. And then also, again, before you start writing inventory, say your resentment inventory prayer, sit in a few minutes of meditation, ask to be guided, and then trust the process. I cannot emphasize that enough. Just trust the process. Whatever you're guided to write, just write that. I do want to make a note about this too, about seeking counseling or therapy. It's totally real that, you know, that sometimes as we start to dive into our four steps, stuff comes up, like especially if it has to do with abuse or trauma, and it might feel like too much to look at alone, or it might feel like you want additional support. And I just want to say there is nothing wrong with seeking counseling while you're doing the steps. There's nothing wrong with it. While I was doing the BBA steps, I was also seeing a fabulous therapist who was also in food recovery herself, and she was an amazing addition to my program, and I just absolutely loved her. So yes, we're focused on a spiritual program, and that doesn't mean that if you feel guided to work with a therapist or a counselor or somebody who can support you as you look at certain things, like, there's no shame in that, absolutely. I guess the bottom line I want to say is that there is no reason to feel like you're out in the cold doing this work in a vacuum. I know that we're not all physically showing up in the same room together, and so it might at times feel like, I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm all in this by myself, and you aren't. You have God with you at all times. You can just turn. But you also have this group, and you have an online 24/7 group that you can message. You have people that you can call, and then you have this step-by-step process. It's really laid out for you. If you're doing your transcribing, if you're doing the assignments each week, if you're sitting in your meditation and you're asking to be guided, this program and this process will open up for you. Just trust it. So I do want to address something, because I feel like it's very common in the room for there to be this kind of this impression of the fourth step. Like, people like build up a wall against it, and they, like, there's all this hype that it's like, it's shitty, and oh, I'm in my fourth step, and, you know, it's this insurmountable thing. And when it's actually really an incredible, potent, transformational process that sets us free. And I always remind people, like, let's not fool ourselves, because we're either writing on our fourth step or we're living in our fourth step. And so don't think for one minute that if you don't do your fourth step, you're somehow safe from the effects of, like, your resentments and your fears and all the stuff that's going on, you know, because it's far from it. In fact, if you're living in it, you're going to work with it, you're showering with it, you're eating with it, it's like it's always there under the surface, and it's affecting every single area of your life. So these are some of the things, I just made some notes of some of the things that I feel like come up pretty consistently with people who I work with. So I'm considering these like common feelings or concerns or just things that come up that I want to address ahead of time. So if these things come up for you, you A, know that you're not alone, and B, you get that you're exactly where you're supposed to be. So the first one that I felt guided to talk about was trying to be perfect. I know I mentioned this just a moment ago, but just leave that behavior for your disease. Like this is about being willing and being trusting and being willing to go to any length, but look to God for what that means. And it doesn't necessarily mean that everything has to be perfect. Just if you're asking to be guided and you're asking to be shown what's blocking you, you're going to see everything that you need to see. I promise you, you're going to see everything that you need to see. This will work for you. And I also want to validate if you are still having doubt and fear, because sometimes fear is actually a good thing because it motivates me into action. And sometimes actually faith can be a bad thing if I'm relying on, you know, a previous experience, like relying on the God of my understanding from the last time I did my steps. And so if you still have doubt that this might not work, it doesn't mean that you're not properly in your fourth step and you have to go back to step three. I don't believe that. I believe that we feel the fear, and this is our opportunity to actually move forward into action and rely on God. And you got to remember, this is the stuff that we haven't wanted to look at our whole lives. And so it's no wonder that we're going to have some fear. And, you know, because we're looking at the way we've been showing up. And I always remind people that it's really important to understand, and I think I wrote this in the email that I sent out yesterday, that we're not doing our fourth step to find out who we are. We're doing our fourth step to find out who we're not. And this is just how we behave when we're running on self-will, you know, when we're running on our own power, of which we have none. And so this is actually what we're going to be diving into and looking at is the stuff that's blocking us from who we really are. And so along with the conversation of doubt and fear, I want to also address relapsing in the fourth step, because this is a personal belief and a personal practice. When people, I'm taking people through, I don't believe that relapsing is a reason to stop being in your fourth step or go back to step one. The way that I see it is that you made a decision in step three, right? But it's really in 4 through 9 where you're going to get unblocked. And so at this point, even though we've made a decision and we're all rearing to go, we still don't have the power to do different. And, you know, like I said before, you're going to keep doing what you're doing until you don't have to do it anymore. And so I'm not saying, oh, great, you're relapsing. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying that if that starts to happen, if you start to notice that you're having food thoughts or if you are in body obsession, I know that there are some folks who go through the 12 steps looking at food stuff would consider that to be a relapse, and there might be a whole course of action that they take around that. And I'm just saying that while my practices might be really unorthodox, I am a fan of continuing to move through it because we need to get unblocked. And every time I do something that's uncomfortable, where I'm looking at something that I haven't wanted to look at before, it's going to make me want to act out, and it's an opportunity for me to turn to God. So, because remember, we're not doing these steps, and I'm not in my fourth step to learn about my character defects and then to try to fix myself or to try to develop better willpower so that I can change and fix my life. We're doing this work, I'm going to say it again and again, to face and be rid of the things that are blocking us so that the power of God can come in and do everything for us, like fix it, fix our lives, right? And run our lives and direct our lives and guide our lives and support us. And by the end of these steps, we're able to actually relax and take it easy and not struggle. You know, this isn't about kind of getting to a certain place and then, like, still needing to white-knuckle it through. That is not my experience. Okay. A lot of disclaimer stuff to get into, but at this point I want to take us into the prayer and meditation and a few minutes of quiet time and reflection, and then we will start into the reading. So if you have your Big Book Awakening with you, on page 53, you'll see up at the top there's an italicized little section in quotes that says, "God, please help me face and be rid of the things in myself which have been blocking me from you, other people, and myself." So let's say that together. God, please help me face and be rid of the things in myself which have been blocking me from you, other people, and myself. And we'll go into a few minutes of meditation. Okay. So if you want to pull out your big book, I'm going to start getting into this. So last week in step three, we reviewed the ABCs, right? That A, that as an overeater or restrictor, either in abstinence or in relapse, that I can't manage my own life. That's step one, right? And then B, that probably no human power can relieve my behavior and my ism. And, of course, that God can and will if he is sought. And then we looked at how we've been trying to run our lives based on self-will and trying to manage everything around us and being the actor who's trying to arrange the scenery and the lights and the ballet and end up being a producer of confusion. And then on page 62, I see that my behavior, my selfishness and self-centeredness is actually the root of my problem. And it's driven by 100 forms of fear and self-delusion and self-pity. Right? We get that wonderful paragraph. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. And like I mentioned last time, that actually, the fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, that is actually showing me what I'm going to be looking at in my resentment inventory. So that's what's in store for us. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us. We're going to be looking at that, the cause today. Seemingly without provocation, but invariably we find that at some time in the past we've made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So we see that we have the selfishness, self-centeredness, but then it also tells us that we, like, this is going to kill us and that we can't actually do anything about it ourselves. We can't will it away. We can't wish it away. We can't go to therapy and, like, you know, like, talk it away. We, like, the only thing that's going to work is that God needs to do this for us. God needs to remove this for us. And so we make a decision to stop playing God, because God can't work in our lives if we're trying to play God, so we have to fire ourselves from playing God, and then we enter into this decision to turn our will and our life over to God and enter into this three-part relationship as the director and the principal and the parental figure, and this is the decision that we make, right? And then we wrap that up in a neat little bow. We put a little kiss on it with our third, so we affirm it with our third step prayer. The third step prayer is not the decision. The third step prayer is just the affirmation after our decision. And it tells us at the bottom of the page, on page 63, we found it very desirable to take the spiritual step with an understanding person, such as our partner, our best friend, or spiritual advisor, but it is best to meet God alone. I'm just going to mute. Sounds like we got somebody who is not muted. It's better to meet God alone than with someone who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional so long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. This was only a beginning, though, if honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once. The God of our understanding in three is not going to be the same God of our understanding as it is in step 11, and that's okay, because we have what we need to make a beginning, and that's perfect for the fourth step. And like we talked about last time, we don't have an amen at the end of the third step prayer, because we say the amen at the end of the seventh step prayer, and everything between now and the end of the seventh step prayer is actually part of our third step prayer. We're being held in the grace of the third step prayer all the way through until we complete our seventh step and say that amen at the end of that prayer. Then we get this wonderful wording, the last paragraph, starting on the bottom of page 63. Next, we launched. We launched into a course of vigorous action. This isn't just saying, yeah, and then we decided to take a little break and in a few weeks, we just said, no, it's like next we immediately launched into a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning. Okay. Which many of us had never attempted. So our decision, the third step decision, was a vital and crucial step. It could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. So that's where we get that prayer. That's why we say that. And it's also letting me know that this is why I'm doing inventory. Like, I'm not doing inventory to discover myself and to work on myself. It uses this term, be rid of. And that is not something that happens in the psychological realm. Like, that's not something that happens in therapy. You don't sit down with your therapist, even as wonderful as my therapist was. We never sat down and she was like, right, you're in here on session one. We're going to face and be rid of the things that are blocking you so that you don't even need a session two. Like, that wasn't it. You know, we talked and we looked at my childhood and we looked at all of the other things going on in my life, and I got somebody to really, you know, support me and definitely help me to see stuff, but it was about supporting me and about developing coping tools to manage in my life. So it was like, okay, when this comes up in this situation, try doing this with this person. Try this. And you know, I'm not saying that that is not useful. There's some really, really useful stuff that I got in therapy. But that's not what they're saying here. They're saying that we're going to face and we're going to be rid of it. God's going to actually remove it. And this is what's been blocking me from myself. So our eating and restricting behavior was but a symptom. We had to get down to causes, which at this point we're talking about causes being in column two. What we're going to come to find is that these are just the surface causes, and as we get deeper into our inventory, we're going to see that the causes actually come from a deeper place. And the conditions, which is our third column, and that's the root of my problem. So therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. And then we get this great analogy. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding, right, searching, and a fact-facing, a fearless process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot be fool himself about values. Okay, so, and it says we did the exact same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. So, the image that I get is of, like, well, someone who's working at, right, inventory stockist or something. But I think of it in terms of zooming out and being the observer of my life, to look at the facts, and to look at the truth about the stuff that's blocking me. This isn't my time to, like, be in it and be all triggered and that kind of stuff. This is like I'm kind of zooming out and I'm becoming the observer of this stuff. And I'm getting very, very factual. And I'm going to use the word detached, but not detached as if I'm, like, dissociating, but just detached as in I'm not, as Tyler would always say, I'm not taking a ticket and jumping on the train, going around, you know, or going around on the merry-go-round again. I'm not taking the ticket. And I love the word values that we get there, because I really have to look at what is it worth, what's in it, what is the worth of me holding on to my resentment? So, because there must be a worth, because I've been holding on to them. So what is the worth, what is the value I've been placing on holding on to my resentment? Does it make me feel right? You know, do I have that fear that if I start to look at this stuff, then I'm going to come to find that that person was right and I'm wrong? Am I looking at this in terms of right and wrong? Because that's actually not what we're going to be looking at. It's not even a matter of right and wrong. See, that's the way my addict brain thinks about it. Somebody's right and somebody's wrong. Somebody, I have a part and they have a part. We're not looking at parts. We're not looking at right and wrong. We're looking at sickness and getting better. So perhaps both of us are spiritually sick. but this isn't about right and wrong. And this also isn't about, it drives me nuts when people are like, well, my part, da 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 da. I'm like, no. We're not, because if I'm talking about my part, then I'm automatically assuming that you have a part. And then I'm still doing this, like, me and you, us and them thing. But what I'm looking at instead in my inventories are my mistakes, right? The areas where I can grow. The areas where my spirit has been sickened. That's the context. That's the lens. That's the framework that I'm looking through. So when I ask God to help me see myself and my past through your eyes, God doesn't look, you know, like I'm not going to see it from this bad and good and right and wrong. That's not it. That's me in my own judgmental framework. Does the worth that I'm placing on resentment make me feel powerful? Because resentment gives me a feeling of power and self-righteousness, and sometimes it's like a quick fix to feeling powerful. Does it allow me to stay in victim mode or self-pitying or allow me to act entitled? So I have to look at, like, what am I gaining from holding on to it, and is it worth it? So it's always just an interesting consideration here. And then it says, so we did exactly the same thing with our own lives. We took stock honestly. First, we search out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. And the transcription that you have here is the common manifestations of self are resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, fear, and the way I treat people, right? My motives in relationships. And we're going to be doing inventory on each one of these areas. We're going to be looking at all this stuff. So it says in the next paragraph, resentment is the number one offender. This is a really, really critical paragraph. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more overeaters and restrictors than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. That's a powerful freaking sentence. Because here I thought that resentment was just something on the outside. I thought that it was like, I'm mad at you, and this is happening here. This is happening in my work environment. This is happening in my home environment. This is happening in whatever. But I thought it was outside of me. And what this is telling me is that this is actually a spiritual disease. So I go all the way back to page 52 in the Bedevilments and, you know, looking at my world reflected around me, and even though my world reflected around me makes me think that the problem's outside of me, I come to find that the problem is inside of me. And that resentment is something that happens inside from a sickened spirit, and it's actually the number one offender, because from that resentment, I'm immediately cut off from the sunlight of the spirit, and from it stem all forms of spiritual disease. So it's telling me how important this is to look at the resentment. For we have not only been mentally and physically ill, but we've been spiritually sick. And it's exactly what I was just talking about. This is about being spiritually sick and getting spiritually fit and getting spiritually well, not about being bad and getting good, or them being bad and needing to get good. And then this is one of my favorite lines in the entire book, and I quote it all the time. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And that is both a promise and a warning, because I can flip it around. I can flip it around to, if the spiritual malady is not overcome, then I'm not going to straighten out mentally and physically. So that's important. But this is why, and I know I mentioned this in the very, very beginning, I think on one of, like, the first or the second call, which was, this is why I focus on the spiritual aspect of this program more so than on, like, the food planning and that kind of thing. And again, if there's something that supports you, that's fantastic. I'm just personally talking about what works for me because of this line right here, that I know that if I get right spiritually, it's going to iron everything else out. And that has happened with me, and it happens with me over and over again. And even if I get off track, as I've even gotten off track in the last few months, And then I take it through. I run it through the spiritual program. I run it through my relationship with God. I ask to be guided. I ask to be counseled. And I am brought back to a place of deep alignment and even deeper spiritual connection with my Creator. So it says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper, which is the homework that you did for this last time. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. So that's all from last time. What we're going to look at today are the causes. We asked ourselves why we were angry. Okay, so that's what we're getting into at columns 1 and columns 2. And so if you are not muted right now, go ahead and press star 6. Make sure that you're completely muted. Because if I press it again, I'm going to mute all of you guys. You won't be able to unmute yourself. So I just also want to make something clear, because you might not, with the way that the resentment inventory looks, it might not be clear to you what actually is column 1 and column 2. So when you're looking at your resentment inventory, even though we're not writing on it yet, we're not writing on the worksheet yet, I just want you to get clear that the line at the very top that says, I am resentful at, reference page 65, that's column 1, I am resentful at. And you would put the name of the person or the institution or the principal right there. The next line that says the cause, that's column 2. Everything else, after the where it says affects my, keep columns 1 and 2 in mind, blah, 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 right and through, that's all column 3. You are not touching that right now. Don't think you know what it means. Don't think you know what you're supposed to do with it. Don't even go there right now, okay? We're just looking at those two top areas at the very, very top, and we're not even on the worksheet yet. We're just on a separate piece of paper. So, because I've been getting calls this week of people freaking out. They're like, do I need to show up and fill out my forms? I'm like, well, how we haven't even gone over how to do that. So just take a deep breath. You're in the right spot. We're going to be doing this together. No one's going to be just thrown out in the cold like they don't know what they're doing. Okay. So with that said, I actually want to pause right here. I know Tammy's on the call, and I see that Ivy's been trying to call in here, and I don't know if she's actually made it on the call. Ivy, if you are on the call, will you unmute yourself just so I know if you're on the call or not? And in the meantime,
I'm here.
You're here. Okay, well, since you're unmuted.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi, Natan.
I've been having problems connecting the whole evening.
Oh, is that what the noise has been? Okay. Well, I'm really, really glad that you're here. Yeah, thank you. So Ivy, let's actually go. I would love for you just to share for a few minutes. So what I would love for you to speak on is just maybe about 4 or 5 minutes talking about your experience with, a little bit about your addiction and how that manifested for you. And then your experience with doing the fourth step, and then your experience with and any fears or reservations or doubts that you had about if it was going to work for you, and then talking about your experience as a result of having done it, maybe however you're guided to share that way. So would you be willing to talk for a few minutes?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Can I start?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, guys. I'm Ivy, and I am a recovering addict and a recovering anorexic, and I've completed the steps, the BBA way for both of my addictions, both of my problems, and they've worked miracles in my life. A little bit about my eating disorder. It manifested in heavy restricting and, like, weight loss and a little bit of purging here and there and lots of body dysmorphia, and it was really hard to break out of that, and I was definitely fearful of the 12-step program not working. I've gone to two different rehabs for my eating disorder, and I did get some relief, but I knew there was more relief to be offered and more relief, more freedom to gain, and I was just didn't know how to do it, and I didn't know what would get me the access to that power that would give me relief from my body dysmorphia, give me relief from my restricting, from my dieting, from my over-exercising, and a whole everything about my eating disorder. And for me, the fourth step did bring up fear in me, because it's scary writing down all of this information. It's scary to look at ourselves and look at what we do in our addiction, in our disease, how we behave when we're trying to control our own world without any power bigger than ourselves, without a God. And it's especially scary if you haven't done a fourth step before, because I didn't know what my life was going to look like after I'd done this, after I told someone all of this and gave it up to God. And quite frankly, I didn't quite know what giving it up to God looked like. I didn't know what my life could look like without restricting. I didn't know what my life could look like without trying to manage it myself. I didn't know what my life could look like with a God guiding me in every way, in every manner, in every aspect. And so laying it out there was scary. It caused fear, but I knew I didn't have any other option based on my first step. I knew I was hopeless, and I knew that if I didn't turn my life over to the power greater than myself, I knew if I didn't write down all of my inventory thoroughly and look through it again and make sure I didn't miss anything, that freedom wasn't going to be achieved, that I wasn't, quite frankly, like, my eating disorder does take me very close to death, and so eventually I probably would have reached there if I didn't do these steps, and I realized in my first step how powerless I was, and so it gave me the fire to do the fourth step and to go through with it and go through all of the steps. And for me, I did my fifth step with Debbie, and it was a miracle. It was I'm so grateful that I did do it, and I'm so grateful that I got really, really honest, and I really looked at every nook and cranny of my character that was revealed to me, and I sat down and, like, prayed and meditated and asked God not only to remove these character defects and, like, to remove my fears, but also what my life could look like without these fears. And I asked to be shown who God would want me to be, like, what type of woman God would want me to be, and, like, how God would want me to live my life and what that looked like. And so far, like, it's worked a miracle. I've been able to, the people on my resentment inventory with, I no longer have a problem with. I'm able to go to them. I was able to right my wrongs and, like, own up to my part of the past and make that right. And so it's created some blessings in my life, and it's changed my relationship with food, and it's changed my relationship with people too. And when I started doing this work, like, I only wanted my relationship with food to change. I didn't realize how I acted around food affected the people surrounding me. I didn't realize how my eating disorder didn't affect just me, and it brought that type of clarity to me. And I'm able to repair, continually work on and repair relationships, and I'm continually able to change my behavior, like, we'll have God lead me in my behavior towards eating and surrounding food, and it's been amazing, and I'm so grateful that I kind of put away, I don't know, I asked God to, like, take away that fear in me of not trusting anyone to look at this stuff because it really, I don't know, it helped me and it changed my life, and I'm so grateful for it. And especially since when I did my fourth step with my eating disorder, I had already done a fourth step for my drug and alcohol addiction, and so I didn't know how much of a difference doing another fourth step could make in my life. So I don't know if there's anyone who's already done one, but it's made a huge difference just looking, like, more things were revealed to me than I thought could ever be revealed, and, like, God took me further in my life than I ever thought I could possibly be taken further, and that's one thing I had to ask was the willingness to be taken further in my spiritual aspect of my life and, like, further in my honesty and, like, look deeper into me and see what I was still holding on to from my last four steps and give it up in this fifth step, this sixth step, and seventh step and stuff. And I've seen the way I'm able to connect with the newcomer, the way I'm able to connect with other friends that I've known this whole time has changed for the better. And my relationship and my dependence on God has been brought into more areas of my life. And, yeah, and I'm super grateful for it. Thank you for letting me share.
Awesome, Ivy. Thank you so much. And stick around because I'm going to be asking you and Tammy, I don't know if you have your inventory, your four steps, like, mm-hmm. with you at all, but, yeah, I'm going to be asking you just to kind of reference, to give some examples of your column one and column two. So thank you so
okay.
much. That was awesome. Cool. So let's, Tammy, do you want to go ahead and unmute yourself? And maybe, Ivy, you can mute yourself at this point, and we can just kind of do a little flip-flop.
Okay, this is Tammy. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So my name's Tammy from San Diego. I identify as a chaos creator, but also Al-Anon, fixing, controlling, all those kinds of things, codependent. I identify with those as well. I think when Deb had asked me to share, what came up most for me was my chaos creating showed up, I think, primarily in my need to be self-sufficient. So that was something that I really, I think, held onto as being and was very prideful about. I'm self-sufficient. I don't need help. I don't need you, but I'm here to help you and all of those things. I'm right, you're wrong, all that kind of thinking. And it really led me to a place that just fed depression and anxiety. So it was like if I did try to do something or I couldn't be perfect at something, then I had difficulty with being over-anxious or just getting depressed about it. Like, you know, let's say I had an argument with someone. You know, something was wrong, I was wrong, they were wrong. I mean, I just got so caught up in that right and wrong game. Like you said, the black and white, it was just craziness, crazy making. And one of the reasons Deb wanted me to share is that in trying to figure out, I think, what I consider to be in my own life, as like there's something wrong with me. Like I've walked around my entire life thinking, there's something wrong with me, but I don't know what it is, and I don't know how to figure it out. I cannot clear enough of a path to see what it is. And through this work, I came to understand that it was that I was being blocked from God. That, you know, even though I've been Christian for years and have gone to church and, you know, all of these things, I still, there was something blocking me from God that I could not get, I couldn't gain access, and I couldn't understand what it was. I've done my own therapy, hundreds of hours of therapy, support groups, self-help books, pastoral counseling. I've done the 12-step program, the regular way, and I even became a therapist. I mean, as ridiculous as that sounds, it's like I was so intent on finding out what my problem was, I had to actually become a therapist. So that I thought that I could better understand it. So here I am, you know, completely messed up, trying to help other people at the same time trying to figure out what's wrong with me. The one thing I did stop short of doing was using medication to control the depression and the anxiety, and mostly because I just have a oversense of sensitivity to medication to begin with. Physically, my body doesn't like medication in general, so I tried to avoid that and just was kind of like dealing with this stuff on a daily basis on my own. And so when I started the BBA, you know, it kind of starts out the same way, typically, that you do the 12 steps the regular way. Okay, they explain what's happening. All right, I'm powerless. You know, you kind of get that. Yeah, I believe in God because I was Christian, so I believe in a God. And you know, but there's something about the BBA that allows you access to God. It actually allows you to become unblocked from what He has for your life. I finished my fourth step, did all of my paperwork and all the resentment inventories and everything, and when I started working with Deb on my fifth step and was sharing, she said, you know, what is it that, you know, what do you think is going to happen? What's going to be different in your life? How are you going to move forward from this? What do you really need from this work? And I just told her, I said, this is my last ditch effort. I'm like, this is the last thing that I have to go through. I said, if this doesn't freaking work, I'm like, I will be on medication. I mean, I really was that hopeless that I am like, I cannot believe that I have gone through all of these things, all of the education, hours and hours of therapy, that in some way, how can I not be unblocked at this point? I couldn't understand why. Couldn't understand what that was about. And again, I had my reservations still, even just having done all of my resentments, because I wasn't on the other side of it yet. And I have the resentment inventories to me have come like become like golden tickets, you know, like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. It's like they were so ultimately so insightful. And with Deb's help, into seeing what it was that was blocking me. It was huge. And I'm so happy that I stuck with it and that I'm on the other side of that. There was a point at which I wanted to give up, but there's a point at which you're digging up so much stuff that you're just kind of grossed out. You're like, ugh, enough of me. I'm tired of talking about myself. And it's like a lot of people give up in the fourth step because it is a lot of, a lot of yucky stuff starts coming out. But hanging on to that and being on the other side of it is huge. And so I think, you know, one of my fears, one of the things that I wanted to talk about just real briefly was sharing about the seventh step, which I've marked the seventh step prayer. So the seventh step prayer is, my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you, God, and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. And then you say, Amen. And to me, that was scary and at the same time completely freeing, because the fear was, who will I be and how will I cope with life? If I give everything that I am and everything I know a total control of my mind, body, and spirit over to God, what will I have left? And the interesting thing is that on the other side of it, you really have everything, because everything you need is everything that He gives you, everything that you need. You know, you don't have those deep-rooted fears anymore. You know, the direct line to God is open. You have contact with Him. And, you know, it was amazing to me, the transformation that it took, being on the other side of it and realizing, you know, I had really nothing to fear, because he was always there to catch me. He always had my back. Whatever you're saying is He was there for me. And I think that has been the lesson in doing these steps. And what I've really come to understand is that I do have to turn it all over. Mind, body, spirit, all of it, my relationships, everything is His. And if I approach it in that way, I will be happy, joyous, and free. Thank you.
Tammy, thank you so much. Oh, my gosh, both Ivy and Tammy, just appreciate you so much for being on the call and for sharing your experience. And I I want to hear from more folks, but I want to just get into the how-to, make sure that we have thoroughly gotten into that and that people can ask their questions. I'm sure a lot of questions and things have come up, and then we'll continue with the sharing. So, so for those of you who do have your four-step worksheet packet, if you want to just turn to the first page and we get Mr. Brown, we get the first thing here. So we've got, I'm resentful at Mr. Brown, and then the cause. His attention to my wife, he told my wife of my mistress, he may get my job at the office, right? So there's three things, and then we have like a little phrase underneath that in parentheses, he's after my wife and my job. So what you're going to be doing is you're going to be writing a cause, and you're just keeping to the facts, and you're going to make whatever your list is. If you notice that you're getting like much longer than like five or six, like, you know, things, just watch, like have your like your self-pity detector kind of like on full alert, because it's really easy to kind of go into a little bit of our story, a little bit of our justification. If the word because comes in there, you're kind of, it's an indication you're getting into your story. And then what is really, really helpful is just to summarize that cause with a target statement. Now, the target statement they have here is actually something that looks like a sentence. He's after my wife and my job. What I tend to do with my target statements is I'll kind of abbreviate, you know, like if somebody is, you know, they're like, they leave their stuff around the house and they don't wash the dishes and they never do the chores, I'm going to say they're, you know, disrespectful and lazy or something like that. You know, I'm going to kind of like summarize it in two different, or in a very, very tight phrase. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to get a couple of examples going, both from Tammy and Ivy. And, yeah, so let's actually just go into that. I don't know whoever unmutes themselves first. No, it doesn't matter. Either one of you hop back on the line. Who's that?
I'll go.
Okay.
So I'm resentful at my mom because she is emotionally neglectful and verbally abusive and uses money to manipulate.
Great. So what was your target?
That was my target.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
So she uses money to manipulate was your target?
Yeah.
Okay, beautiful. And so that actually brings up a really good point. So if you just have like one or two things, you actually don't really need a target because your statement is that small. So let's hear another one, Tim.
I'm resentful at my dad. The cause, he is self-centered and emotionally distant.
Okay, so then you don't have a target because you just have that as your target, essentially.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you have any examples where you actually have a cause and then a separate and then a target statement?
No, I think most of them that I did, I just had a couple. That my goal was to have it be a target statement. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because I didn't continue writing, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. So I'm actually really, really glad this is coming up because it's, and I think we probably talked about this in when we did your fifth together, but I can't remember. But I do want everybody to, I'm a fan of having both because
okay.
It helps me when I'm looking, and I don't want to talk about this in too much detail because we're not at this place yet, but further into the inventory, into the resentment inventory, it's really valuable for me to get a little bit more detail. It doesn't mean that I want to get into story, but when I get a little bit more detail, then it allows me to see more in my fourth column. So it's a delicate balance. let me see. I'm going to read one of mine. So I'm resentful at this woman named Joy. She's obnoxious. She's self-absorbed. She's loud. She needs to be noticed. And she's an attention hog. And so I have as my target, she's a loud, obnoxious attention hog. Ivy, let's hear a couple of yours.
Okay, so I have one. It's about a friend of mine or a person I know, and mm-hmm. the cause is lies, talks behind people's back, negative, disrespectful, and tells me and others I can't help in the HA community, which is Heroin Anonymous, if anyone, I don't know if people know or not. But so the target would be is liar, disrespectful, and mean.
Beautiful. Great. Yeah, so I'm a fan of, like, keeping, like, three words or just a very, very short statement. Let's hear another one.
Okay, so I'm going to read an old one, but it's my mom, and I wrote down that she's selfish, says hurtful things, doesn't support my recovery, and doesn't keep promises. So I put down for my target, not a good mom.
Right. Excellent. So what we're going to be doing instead of, because I think, I can't remember if it shows you this, yeah, in the Big Book Awakening supplement, it has you do, like, you would do multiple third columns for every single, like, theme of your resentment. Like, let's say, Ivy, are you still on the line? No, she's off the line now. Like, so for every single theme, she would write a third column, and that just creates a lot of busy work. So what we do in the way that I've been taught to go through the Big Book Awakening is you'll, like, maybe have multiple things that you're resentful at, because let's face it, if you've got a family member or, like, an intimate partner, there's going to be multiple things that you're probably going to want to list. But then, so you'll list maybe, like, you know, like three to six of those things, and then you're going to create a target statement that just summarizes it, and that just that allows us to kind of button it up and gives us a lot more clarity as we're going through our third column. So there's plenty of examples in the four-step packet that you can reference. Again, even though you have these examples of how, you know, of the third column, don't go there. Just don't go there. You're still just going to write on your piece of paper the name, institution, or principal, and then the cause associated with that on a separate piece of paper. You're not doing it on your worksheet yet. So I'm going to now open the call up for questions and for comments. So go ahead and unmute yourself if you have a question about anything that we've talked about today. Or maybe you just want to share about how you're feeling, your experience. If you're experiencing any fear, any doubt.
Hey, Debbie.
Hi.
It's Ivy. Can I share something really fast?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, when I was writing inventory on, my mom or people I was really close to, like family members and stuff like that, like, when I first started out, I kind of felt really guilty, like a lot of guilt about, like, say, writing out, like, the causes kind of. And, like, I had this idea that I shouldn't think this way about my mom, that I shouldn't feel, like, a lot of, I shouldn't feel this way, I shouldn't be this way, I shouldn't. But I just
like it was really freeing to write that down on paper, because later on we look at how we are instead of like what they've done wrong to us. So it's really, really important to like kind of try and let go, like for me to ask God to let go of this shame that I had surrounding writing about my family members and people that I was really close with, because it's the way I was feeling was how I was feeling, and without writing and without doing this inventory on them, there wasn't any way to get rid of those emotions, get rid of those feelings there without seeing why exactly I was feeling that way. Does that make sense?
It totally does. Thank you so much for bringing that up. And it actually brings up another aspect that I want to share on, which is the other polar opposite. So some people are like, I've got 50 resentments. And some people are like, I don't have resentments. Like, because exactly kind of along the lines of what you were sharing, like, I know that it's me and not them. And I, you know, and we kind of get into like, you know, kind of like justifying or explaining away our resentments. And what Ivy just shared is so valuable, because it's getting like, let's get rid of all of that layer of already thinking that we are, like, that we're, that's almost like the self-help part of the program, like, which has no place in the fourth step, where we're already taking it to a place of, well, I know I should let it go, and, you know, we're kind of trying to manage our resentments and manage our feelings, and control our emotional nature. And that's actually in the long run doing us a disservice, when to really to say, okay, I'm a huge fan of, especially if you, this is your first time doing the BBA, like, just write on write on your mom, write on your dad, write on your siblings, like write on the closest people in your life. You'll see a lot of truth. Again, just like Ivy said, at the end of the day, it's actually not about them, so don't worry about it, and it's about getting free, and it really, really helps. So when I'm looking at my resentment inventory, I'm looking at those worst behaviors that irk me, that get in my way, and that's actually a really great way of, because sometimes when we sit down, we're like, well, I don't really have any resentments, you know, but if we reframe it in terms of, who feels like they get in my way, or who just bugs the crap out of me? But that is sometimes really helpful. Does somebody want to share?
Hi, it's Lynn.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi. You know, that's really helpful. I was just talking to my buddy about that, as far as not feeling like I have a lot of real strong resentment. But I have been through the BBA before in another program, so I just wanted to elaborate a little bit on the process of, you know, getting to the target, because what was really helpful for me is, if you picture 8.5 by 11 notebook paper, how I was taught to do it was on the back side, and you have them like side by side, and on the left side is the back side of the notebook paper, so the three rings are on the right. And then just like in your notebook, and then you have your other 8.5 by 11. So I have my mom listed, and literally I was just really encouraged to write down all the things that bugged me about her. So I wrote her holier-than-thou attitude towards many situations. 2, didn't believe me that dad abused me when I was little. 3, encouraged me to marry Tim. 4, did not encourage me to fight for custody of Daylen. 5, didn't leave dad when she found out he was cheating. 6, talked to me about dad and the Frextons. And 7, took dad's side when he and I fought. So I had all of this. And then I was suggested to really look at all of it and try to summarize and put, you know, the ones that are similar together so I could get to my summarized target one. So I came up with holier-than-thou attitude. And then a second separate cause, which was didn't support and protect me as a child. So from all of that, I call it vomiting, just all the stuff that really bugged me and I was really hurt, I was able to condense it. And I will say, I did not come to that on my own. I had a very strong sponsor who really helped me get to that. And she's on the line, and I'm just going to throw out a plug. for Kimberly, who has got such great experience with inventory. And I know she's going through the steps on food on this, but she, like, I can't even tell you how this woman helped me with inventory. So thanks. Hope that helps.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lynn. Yeah, and I would love to just open the call up. I know there's a number of seasoned BBAers who are on the call, so if you want to simply share about your experience, we would love to hear that, and also would love to hear from anybody who has a question, and of course, anybody who wants to actually venture into being an example, like so coming and saying, hey, can you help me workshop? I'm resentful at my sister. Can you workshop this with me on the phone in real time? Can we do this together? That would be awesome.
Hi, this is Deborah.
Hey, Deborah.
Hi, Deb. I was going to go over what I did with Lauren, my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
She is loud and an attention hog. She has unrealistic expectations. She is selfish, manipulating, lies, and steals money. My target statement is she is an untreated heroin addict.
Beautiful. There you go. Perfect.
Thank you.
Great. Yeah, thank you. Who else feels called to share, either share an example, having a question, or actually being somebody who's willing to workshop one of their inventories in real time on the phone?
Hi, this is Kimberly, compulsive
eater addict. Hi, Kimberly. Hi, Kimberly.
Hey, hey. Hi. You know, thank you, Lynn. You know, I guess when I'm working with people on this, the thing that I have found to be really helpful, because I know that when I'm looking at resentment, it's kind of like, well, I'm not really that mad. You know, well, you know, and then I start debating what the hell is a resentment, and I kind of talk myself out of it. But what I have found to be really helpful was that to tell people what bugs you. And that was easy for me. It got me off the judgment of the degree of my resentment, because bugging me, I can write down a lot of stuff. And then I also tell them, just like Lynn explained, you know, when I write down the name, to be generous here. This is where I'm right, so have fun, because it's not going to be far from here that I'm going to see how wrong I really am. But in the meantime, have at it. And so just really write down everything that bugs you about that person, imaginary or real, you know, whatever. But also that, as you refer to target statements or the causes, that it always isn't about coming up with just one statement. I have found that I might have four or five on, you know, a particular person, that I can't quite get all of it down into one. Like Lynn showed an example. She had, like, I think, two on her dad. But at the same time, and not to judge it all, as the other young lady before shared, because if there's no energy in this as we move along, it'll fizzle out and go away. But in the beginning, you know, as we're starting off and we're new at this and et cetera, you know, if the name is coming up, it came up for a reason. But, you know, again, you know, the truth will come out in this, and that, again, if there's no energy as we continue on this process, you know, it'll go away. There won't be any more to write about. And also what's important, too, as you are explaining, Deb, is to get down to what the real cause is. Because if that isn't on the mark either, as you continue to go into column three, you're going to see where that's going to be off the mark, because that's off the mark. So that's where I think working with somebody is really helpful, and really relying on some people and reaching out to the more seasoned people in here in this group will help those get down to the exact cause. If it's kind of lightweight, because I find a lot of people tend to describe the resentment versus just write what the resentment is. They're describing it and around it, not exactly on it. But that's where, you know, people who've done this before can really help. But, Deb, again, my hat's off to you and what you're doing. God bless you.
Thanks. Kimberly, I've got a quick question for you because I want to, I think in L.A. you guys maybe do it a little bit different than how we do it in San Diego, so I just want to clarify just so I can be clear and be clear for the people who are on the call. Do you guys do multiple third columns? So like multiple third columns. So like, for example, I'm resentful at my dad. This is reason one, this is reason two, this is reason three. My target statement, which summarizes all three reasons, like the way that we do it in San Diego is we will write one third column on all of that. There might be some unique examples, like let's say I have a relationship with an ex and I want to write on a resentment inventory when we were together and then like when we were exes, because they're such distinct relationships. Or if I'm like, you know, I was molested as a child and I have some childhood trauma, I might want to write from the perspective of my child and write from the perspective of an adult in two separate inventories. But for the most part, the way that we do it in San Diego is that we write one third column with one target statement that summarizes everything from our cause. How do you guys do it in LA?
Well, let's take Lynn's example, like on her father. You know, there wasn't going to be one statement that was going to completely take off all of her, the things that bugged her. So when I work with people, I say, if I were to come up with a statement and it was this, how much of would we be able to mark off of what bugs you? And they cross all that off. Because sometimes it's, you know, the relationship has more than one cause to it that doesn't quite, you can't summarize it in one statement. But like you were saying, you know, you don't want to get into 5, 6, 10 on one person. But most of the time, you know, if it's a deep relationship, like a parent, long-term relationship, you haven't done an inventory before, there may be 3 or 4 causes or sheets that you do on that person that are very different. But, yeah, we want to group them. We want to, yeah, you want to look for kind of like themes and stuff. If you kind of see the same stuff coming up, it doesn't, hey, why? You're just writing to write. Does that make sense?
Thanks, Kate. Yeah. So I'm going to thank you so much, Kimberly. I'm glad that you clarified that. So I'm going to, for people who aren't really sure what we're talking about and you're confused, feel free to contact me after the call. The way that Tyla does it, the way that we do it through the San Diego BDA is the way that I heard Lynn's share was that she said it's this and this, and those two things together would go as the target statement for me. I would write. Lynn, what was your final what was the sentence again? It was like you had this as one thing, and then this is another thing, right? What were those two things?
It was my mom, and the first resentment sheet was her holier-than-thou attitude.
Uh-huh. And then what was the other one?
And that encompassed, like, maybe 3 out of the 7. And then the second one was didn't support and protect me as a child. Because the holier-than-thou attitude was so different than not believing me about my sexual abuse and about several other things. And the third columns are different, and the fourth columns were different in that. And I had several of those on the close family members. And this was my first inventory.
And those were two sheets on that one person.
If somebody has somebody intimate in their life and they're confused and they think that they might need multiple sheets, feel free to give me a call. We'll talk about this because this is kind of getting into some more advanced conversation around how to handle inventories that is kind of taking it in a little bit more of a place that might be confusing for a lot of people who are going through this the first time. The way that I have been instructed and the way that I've done it every time I go through this step is I would actually take both of those things, how she didn't support you and the other theme, and like that all, both of those things together would be the target statement. And then in my third column, I would have multiple lines. Like, I might have one statement that addressed the one thing and one statement that addressed the other thing. Mm. And so I would actually look at, so I wouldn't just have one line for each thing. So it's just, it really, yeah, anyway. So
yeah, that makes sense. I like that.
Yeah, so yeah. Instead of having lots and lots of different pages going on. So as it relates to this particular inventory process, I'm going to be instructing the group from that, from that way that I've been guided to do, that we do in San Diego. And I'm not shaming or making wrong anybody else's format that works for them. So if there is a way that you do it that really works for you and the people that you work with, that's awesome. I'm not going to be sharing to do it that way. So just in order to not make things confusing for people. Okay, great. Wonderful. Are there any final comments or questions? Because I know I'm going to get contacted from people after this call. It always happens. And I know that there, for as many people who said that they were on the call, I know there's about 30 or 40 people who aren't on the, who haven't announced themselves, because I get the printouts and I get the sheets, and I know that we have a lot of people on the call. Is there anyone who has a question or want to share their experience? Or want to actually workshop? Yeah, go ahead, please.
I just have one more suggestion, and that is doing the inventory sheets in pencil with erasers, because I found myself, with the help of my sponsor, retooling it and rewording it a little bit, and it just was much easier. It was much easier in pencil. So that's just my experience. Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, great. Thank you. Beautiful. And this is all the beautiful, juicy stuff that we get to share with each other in the Facebook group. So this will be great, great, great stuff for us to share in the Facebook group.
This is Hortense.
Hi, Hortense.
Hi, this is Jan in Burbank. Whoops.
Hi. Jan, one second. Hortense, do you want to share, and then we'll get Jan?
Yeah, first I just have to tell you, there was a pause before, and I started sharing, and I didn't realize I wasn't unmuted. So I was just discoursing to myself. So I won't go back because it was related to something that was said earlier. But you did ask if anybody wanted, if I understood correctly, to give an example and to work it through here.
Yeah.
Are you still interested in doing that?
Absolutely.
I'm willing to be a guinea pig.
Wonderful. Let's do it. All right. So
okay.
I present that. Who is the person?
My brother.
Great. Okay, the cause?
Because he left me just after I was given a cancer prognosis.
Okay,
is it
great.
Okay if it's a heavy duty? Yeah, okay.
I mean, that's it, yeah. And then you wouldn't need a target. If it was just that, he left me after my cancer prognosis, if that was, like, if that's the main resentment, you don't actually need a target, because that is it right there.
That's the target. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Is that the only thing with your brother?
No.
Okay. So he left me after the prognosis. What else?
Again, I don't know what's appropriate to say or not say. He left without telling me, to go, for a very high profile, cushy job. So in essence, he chose fame and fortune over his only sibling and his only relative. So like, to me, that's another piece of it.
Oh, okay. Okay. So he chose fame and fortune. Okay. So. Uh-huh, okay. Uh-huh, so, and then what else? So it's still around the same theme. Is there anything else, or is there more there? I mean, you don't, like, there's nothing inappropriate for you to say. That's the main thing?
That's the main thing.
Okay. So, like, I mean, I might even, I mean, you could stick with something else. I might even say, like, you know, he's an abandoning, or he's a like, you know, something, a word to kind of say, like values aren't in the right place, you know, like he's a superficial abandoner or something like that.
Okay,
does that
thank
make,
you.
You know what I mean? That kind of thing.
That's better than calling him a selfish SOB.
you can call that. That's perfect. See, there's a charge of that, which is great. A selfish SOB. Done. He's a selfish SOB. Perfect.
Okay, I have a quick question about that.
Yeah.
When I was monologuing to myself, what I just wanted to let anybody who's on, who doesn't think they have resentments, I did my first fourth step thinking that I had no resentments because I was a very nice person, and I really didn't have any resentments, and I wasn't angry at anyone. And with the encouragement of the big book study I was in and the sponsor that I had, I ended up with 140 pages, and it was like whatever metaphor you want to use, Pandora's box, or I felt like a jack in the box, that I didn't realize how repressed I had been. And it was amazing how when I was working through my fourth step, how much people would say, you have a personality change. You're functioning as a different person. And it was really, really, really incredible. It was and it is, because it is an ongoing process. Okay, why was there was a point to why I brought that up. One second. Because when I say he's a selfish SOB, that part of me that isn't completely rid makes excuses. Well, I understand why he needed to do that because of the way he was brought up and because of what his unconscious needs are. So do I put that in my...
Nope.
Okay.
Yep, that's a perfect... You just illustrated kind of a point that I was trying to make earlier, which I might not have... Which maybe didn't come out that clearly. That's exactly a perfect distinction. So we don't want to take our therapy mindset and, like, justify it away and stuff. That's not what the process is. It's beautiful to get to the essence because truly... When we think about, like Kimberly said so perfectly, what bugs you? What bugs me? I'm like, oh, it's so irritating. I want to capture that feeling right there, that like, oh, God. I want to capture that moment, whether I'm thinking about my mom, my boss, my coworker, my friend, my sibling, whatever it is. And in the moment of that resentment, he is an SOB. He's a selfish SOB, you know? She is a neglectful mother. She, you know, like, he is an abusive father. He is, that is an untreated child, like, or an untreated addict. Like, that is where we're going to see the most. And so, again, we have so many layers, especially those of us with food issues. We have so many layers of stuffing our true feelings, being nice on the outside, and not just food issues. The Al-Anons, we're in that too. The Chaos Creators, we're in that too. We're so good at controlling the nature of our character, right? The nature of our emotions, and not even being in touch with our emotions, and kind of just like, you know, kind of making it seem like we don't have this stuff going on. We're afraid of looking at that. This is where we want to start looking at that. We want to start looking at those resentments. Who wants to share?
Hi, it's Jan.
Hi, Jan.
I'm driving. I'll make this real brief. I'm in the middle of my fourth step, and I just want to encourage people. Well, first of all, thank you, Lynn, because you've been there for me, and I get choked up. Thank you for not rolling your eyes or kissing when I said that I'm not a liar. And she knows what I mean. And thank you, Kimberly, too. So there's this, you know, multi-generational in program. And I want to just thank you, Deb, for what you mentioned at the very, very beginning of this session, because there are so many, we have so much support. And the other thing, Lynn mentioned the other thing was
what really helped me was what has energy? Like, you know, there could be really small things, but I started out with, you know, my mother, my father, my siblings, and, you know, and I just want to thank Lynn again for all her help. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Jen. Great. Do we have any final folks who want to either share about their experience having done the fourth step before, offer any kind of little considerations, like do it in pencil kind of things, or actually want to workshop one of theirs? Because you're going to be going home. This is your homework. So you might as well start banging it out right now on the phone.
This is Kimberly again. You know, when I went through this the very first time with my sponsor, Fran, who has since passed, you know, here I was with double-digit time and afraid to take the third step. And she said something to me that just motivated me and changed my perception. She said that when you come to the edge of all the light you know, and you're about to step off into the darkness of the unknown, that faith is knowing one of two things. You will either land on solid ground or you will be given wings to fly. And when she said that to me, I knew that I couldn't fail. That whatever my decision was, whatever my effort was, whatever my willingness was, that I knew that I couldn't fail. And that hoop that they talk about, that hole, that circle that God makes several turns, that I knew that I would be able to walk through that. And then the other thing that she continued to push on me was in the inventory was how free do you want to be? You know, and as long as I had that guy, how free do I want to be on this stuff? And so it also helped me motivate me to keep going forward. And as you were saying, you know, we're looking at some very unattractive stuff about ourselves that I have conveniently pushed back in the corner of my mind. But the truth is that it's in my everyday living. It comes out in my acting out with my food, my relationships, my attitude, my actions, everything. And so, you know, with those two things, it really helped me with almost 20 years being so dry in the rooms to push past my own, you know, best thinking in a sense. And I just wanted to put that out there because it helped me so much.
I love that. Will you send that to me so that I can share that with the group again? That's a beautiful, beautiful quote.
Isn't that
great?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. Thank you so much for that share. I mean, this is the beauty. I mean, I hear from you all during the week. So, I mean, I'm getting sent meditations and audio listening and aha moments and beautiful things and pictures. And I'm just getting all this beautiful stuff. I want everybody to share in the beauty of that I've been receiving. So as we have these incredible, valuable, you know, quotes and moments in our lives and shares, or saying, hey, I really, really need some help. I need some fellowship here. Let's start doing that and really create this online fellowship that is already there and so present. The image that I always get when I start the fourth step is one of soul excavation. And I picture that I'm about to walk down into the depth of the dark mystery, and I need a light, and God is the light. And so God lights my pathway, and all I need to do is keep on putting one foot in front of the other and keep on trusting. And as I step, God lights up the very, very next patch of ground for me to step on, and that's how it works. And this is where I really, really, I just want to come back and say this one more time. This is where I really start to depend and develop that reliance on God. Because as the fear crops up, remember, fear can be a good thing because it's going to motivate me to get into action and to turn and to ask for guidance. And just like Kimberly said, I mean, if I can walk in with fear in one hand, faith in the other hand, and saying, all right, I'm feeling the fear, but I do have faith that if I'm willing to trust and I'm willing to step into the darkness, that I'm either going to land on solid ground
or I'm going to get wings to fly. So beautiful. So let's just end our meeting today with the third step prayer. So God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. God bless. Thank you, everybody, for sharing today. Awesome, awesome meeting. I will be making that Facebook group live on Wednesday. Contact me with any questions, and I'll see you next week.